Well, I love spending time on our Wisconsin lakes. Maybe you do too, or maybe you just enjoy walking along the shore and looking at those wonderful lakes that we have here in the state. We've got a lot of them, and I really think that the organization we'll be talking about next does a great job helping to protect and enhance their quality. Mike Engelson is Executive Director of Wisconsin Lakes, and we're going to find out about that organization and the upcoming Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention that's also coming up. Maybe you can get involved in that. And you may have some concerns about our lakes or maybe some experiences to share. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. And Mike Engelson, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's talk a little bit first about your organization, Wisconsin Lakes. How are you organized? You're made up of a lot of lake organizations, are you not?
Yes. So we were formed about 25 years ago. We mostly represent lake associations and lake districts, so the two main kind of lake organizations in Wisconsin, who are all interested in doing conservation efforts on their lakes. We also have individual members as well. We were originally named the Wisconsin Association of Lakes. That's how a lot of people know us. And we dropped association a few years ago because we wanted individuals to feel welcome as well as the lake organizations.
So what's the benefit of joining in Wisconsin Lakes?
Well, for lake organizations, we offer lots of services, from technical assistance to connecting you with the right people that can help you with more detailed questions of lake management and things like that. We've joined in on a project that helps organizations create their own websites so they can inform their own members about what's going on their lake better. That's called lakekit.net, and that's something that we're debuting probably at the Lakes Convention, actually.
Yeah, very cool. And individuals can join as well.
Yeah, and so generally we do, as I said, conservation work, so both educational and technical assistance. We also do have a lobbying wing where we work on issues of strong lake policy at the state capitol.
So you can join in with your questions. We've got Norm on from Oneida County, but there's a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Norm, and what's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning. I was going to mention, I went to a talk recently at Nicolet College up here in Rhinelander.
Yeah.
And they talked about the effect of global warming, and especially Lake Superior, it's going to be devastating.
So are you guys looking at climate change and its effect on the lakes?
Well, certainly climate change is something that's, I think, on everyone's mind in the conservation community. And it has different effects in different places, obviously. And so my organization mostly deals with inland lakes in Wisconsin. So, while we certainly are interested in the impacts of all waters in the state, we're looking at it more from the inland lake standpoint. So, climate change can have impacts on water levels. It can have impacts on, any stressors on a water body can create problems with the whole ecological system of that water. So we look at it from that standpoint.
Okay. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Norm. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. I want to get to the Wisconsin Partnership. Talk about that for a bit.
Yeah, and the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership is unique in the nation. It actually predates my organization, it essentially is made up of the three core partners are my group, Wisconsin Lakes, which is sort of the citizen wing of it. The UW Extension Lakes Program, which is based in Stevens Point, they serve kind of the academic role. And then the Department of Natural Resources, especially their Lakes and Rivers team, is the sort of science and government end of the partnership. And we've the three groups together with everyone that works on lakes, from county conservation departments to all of the citizens that we represent, to some other regional organizations around the state, we all try to work together to help improve the quality of our waters.
And so this convention, I think it's called Heeding the Call this year.
Yes.
What does that signify to you?
So it's the 41st Lakes Convention, and it's the 40th anniversary of Loon Watch, which is a program at Northland College. Mm-hmm. So one of our plenary talks, we've asked the people from Loon Watch to come talk about what they do, because one of our big pushes in the lakes community is to promote the idea of citizen science, so citizen monitoring. And that's one of the main core things that Loon Watch does, and we wanted to help celebrate them. Loons have wonderful calls, as everyone yeah. knows, probably the most iconic thing about lakes in the state. So we came up with Heeding the Call from there.
Okay. Well, so you're going to be talking about loons, but there are, what are some other topics that are that you're going to cover that you're kind of looking forward to?
Sure. We have a whole wide range of things from science to policy to cultural kind of things. So there's a whole thread of breakout sessions on aquatic invasive species. There are things on fisheries and wildlife. We have a people and politics section where we'll talk about stuff that's going on, not only from in the political range, but just in terms of how lake organizations can increase their ability to be effective through, to use a jargony term, capacity building. I mm-hmm. hate that term, but that's what we always call it. So, and I'm actually helping teach a workshop on that on Wednesday. So,
you got to think of a new name for it.
So, yeah.
Mike, that's what you got to do. Oh, boy.
I always give my extension colleagues a hard time because, you know, it's like, oh, we got to come up with new, with better jargon. But
well, Dr. Stephen Carter.
Carpenter.
I'm yes. sorry. Carpenter is going to be speaking. What's the he going to be talking about?
Yeah, he is a world-famous limnologist that teaches here at the University in Madison. And he'll be talking about efforts in Dane County in the Ahara watershed to do some restoration work. Our convention is actually going to be on the Friday of the convention, so it's Wednesday, April 18th through Friday the 20th. But Friday and Saturday is going to be the Society for Ecological Research Great Lakes Midwest Chapter's annual meeting. They're doing that in conjunction with us, so Dr. Carpenter kind of fits both roles. It'll be a dual keynote, so it'll be even more opportunities to network with some people that we don't normally get to talk to.
As you look at this, and you've obviously done a lot of thinking about this, what are the main issues that you see regarding our lakes, our 15,000 or so lakes here in Wisconsin?
Sure. And I imagine we can probably take up the rest of the time talking about all of those different problems in no order of importance. Certainly, the impact of aquatic invasive species has things that are coming in and brought in from outside that can impact the ecosystem of the lake are important. Polluted runoff, whether it comes from factory outputs or farm fields or our own homes and lawns, all of that has a huge impact on the quality of the water that we have. In some parts of the state, there are questions of both groundwater quality and quantity impacting our surface waters as the water flows from underground into the lakes. There's not enough of it. Obviously, there's going to be some impact on water levels. So those are sort of the big ones that we've identified. And one of our core principles is to try to find ways, not only from a policy standpoint, from an individual practice and a practice on the lake of how to make things better, how to improve those
situations. Well, those are three big ones there to tackle, let alone there's probably some others too. But those, as I was thinking about things, those are areas that I would certainly be concerned about. How do you tackle something like invasive species? What are you doing in this particular area, for example?
Sure. So the partnership has done quite a lot. The state actually is close to releasing a new strategic plan for how to deal with this problem for what the Department of Natural Resources would like to do. But we promote certainly the idea of being aware, we promote the idea of making sure that you're that as you go from lake to lake, whether you're a boater or if you're going from stream to stream, if you're a fisher person, make sure that your equipment's clean. That's the number one thing that we can do as citizens to prevent the spread, is to just not let the critters and plants come along with us.
Yeah, I tell you, it is such a, you know, if you're fishing in, let's say, northern Wisconsin, and you're on a lake, and you say, oh, let's run over to this other lake, and you don't take the time to clean your boat off or get the weeds out of your prop.
Right. So, and at most landings, you'll see signage, and sometimes you'll be approached by people, usually wearing a blue T-shirt that says "Clean Boats, Clean Waters" on it. That will be happy to talk to you about best practices for how to get stuff off your boat and make sure that you're doing what you need to do to keep things clean.
Yeah, Dina and Hazel Green, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. It's always good to hear your show.
Thank you.
So I have a question. I live in an area where the houses were built in the 1970s on the ridgetop of these areas that have drainage into coulees. And what I've noticed in the last 2 to 3 years with increased rainfall, along with changes in homeownership, which have led to more clearing of the trees and brush from the backsides of these houses, that there's starting to become severe erosion into the coulees and down into the gullies in around the area, whole area of the southwest Wisconsin. Is there anything available as a program to mitigate that, or any studies being done to see what the impact of these increased rainfalls will have, or look at changing ways in which these homes are built? That's my question.
Okay, thanks very much for calling. Mike, what have you got for us?
So in the instance of lakes, there are definitely some things that can be done. It sounds like maybe Dean is talking about some places where it's, you know, runoff into streams. No matter what you want to do is try to slow that flow down. So the best way to do that is to either collect the water before it starts running off, or put in some sort of vegetative buffer that will slow the water down and let it infiltrate into the soil. So if you have lawns that are, you know, if you're on top of the hill and your lawn goes all the way down to the bottom, that water is going to pick up speed and keep rushing, whether down into the stream or down into the lake. In the case of lakes, we actually do have some funding mechanisms that can help individual property owners pay for some of the techniques that they need to do to handle that problem.
And we'll take up and talk some more in depth about that. We are going to take a quick look at the news first, but hang in there. Mike Engelson, our guest executive director of Wisconsin Lakes, as we talk with him about protecting and enhancing our lakes. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. What part do Wisconsin lakes play in your life? I'd love to hear about it, as would my guest, Mike Engelson. He is executive director of Wisconsin Lakes Organization. And that group works to protect and enhance the quality of our lakes. We're talking about the issues facing our waterways in this year's Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. Questions that you might have about the lakes near you, I hope you'll join in, or maybe far away from you. We're going to take a crack at answering those as well. How do you help protect Wisconsin lakes? I hope you'll call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And when we broke for the news, Mike, you were talking about homeowners on lakes and what they might be able to do, or what they can do to help keep runoff, soil, pesticides, herbicides, or whatever from going into their lake.
Right. Individual homeowners can do quite a lot to help with the quality of their waters. Certainly, it's different from lake to lake, the level of impact they can have, but any little bit is always going to help. And Wisconsin has a project called the Healthy Lakes Initiative, which allows for $1,000 grants for projects to basically help slow the water down and let it infiltrate into the soil before it reaches the lakes, like I was talking about before. So it can be in the form of rain gardens. It can be in the form of a vegetated buffer, kind of a rock infiltration holding pond system. And it also pays for what are called fish sticks, which is essentially dropping trees into the water off your shore. It helps create fish habitat, and it also helps slow the flow of water down, all of which helps contribute to a higher water quality in your lake.
We have a number of callers online, but before we get to that, I wanted to answer something from Tom in Duluth. He called in to ask how the term lake is defined versus, let's say, a pond.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting question. We were talking about it at the break, and I said at one level, it's sort of like the old Duke Ellington line: if you have to ask what swing is, you just don't know. it's not a well-defined term. It really depends on the context of when it's being asked. So a 5-acre pond is really considered a lake. It's on those water bodies are listed on the lake list, which is there's a list of water bodies considered lakes you can access on the DNR website. But certainly lakes come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes, from ones that don't have any outflow and are only fed by a spring, to ones that are, you know, produced are man-made bodies that are impounded waters behind a dam, and you know, everything in between.
And they rely on probably rainwater.
Mostly rainwater. You know, the upstream flow of that river or stream has an impact on them. Most lakes have a couple of inlets as well if they're that type of lake.
Yeah. Kyle in Cottage Grove has a question, I think, that relates right to that. Kyle, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I was wondering if your guest could say what percentage of all Wisconsin lakes are dammed up rivers, and given climate change, would it be better to get rid of the dams and let the rivers flow? I look at the restoration of the Milwaukee River, for example. Thank you. I'll take your answer out there.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Kyle.
Sure. There's a lot to talk about in that question. So I don't actually have the exact percentage of lakes that are dammed, but I can tell you that the majority of the dam lakes are probably in the southern half of the state. Just geographically, there's more rivers that were historically used to create mill ponds or things like that, and many of the existing dams are around for that reason. There are some lakes that are natural lakes that are part of a river system that use a dam to control water levels. So Koshkonong Lake would be a good example of that, or even a lot of people don't know this, but Lake Winnebago really is that sort of lake as well. So it's a natural lake, but it has a dam that controls it. And then there are others that are the true mill ponds, where the lake wouldn't exist if it were not for the dam. As for the thorny question of dam removal, there are a lot of factors that go into that question that I think are relate to ecological concerns, cultural concerns, historical concerns. So it's a very situationally dependent concept. You know, certainly the health of the Milwaukee River probably improved because some of those dams came out. But there's a lot of history in many of the lake communities that are centered around dams. So it's something that I think is a very local decision that has to be taken. You know, a lot has to go into that consideration.
Yeah, I know. And in quite a few instances, there's just the cost of maintaining the dam itself has led to the some big fights about, well, who's going to pay for the upkeep of this, or do we let it go?
Certainly. And this allows me to do to segue into a shameless plug for the convention. There's actually a workshop in the afternoon on Wednesday that's going to be about this very question, about dam ownership and sort of the history of dams in the state, especially as it relates to lake districts. Lake districts are sort of a quasi-governmental body, kind of like a school board, that has taxing authority, that the properties are all surrounding part of or all of a lake become part of a lake district, oftentimes with the express purpose of taking ownership of a dam and paying for the upkeep and whatnot, and the many thorny issues that that can involve.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Nick, who's near Sandusky, Ohio. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. It's me again.
Yeah.
Just driving all over the country.
Yeah.
I can't live without WPR. I got a great setup. I can listen to it right on my headset. Thank you so much for your program. I love lakes. I couldn't live without them. I grew up on three lakes, and they're part of my spirituality. I'm wondering about salt, though. Salts, road salts that are getting into lakes. I heard a study that was just done by the UW, and it's basically accumulating, and it's not going away. It's just staying in the water. I've called my representative, and he kind of, I don't know if it's one of his top priorities, but he kind of just, I was wondering what kind of like suggestions you have for like legislation or mm-hmm. or who to contact about that.
Yeah. Nick, thanks again for calling. Mike, what have you got for us?
Yeah, that's in some ways kind of an emerging issue that we're beginning to look at. We as an organization haven't set any direct policy on that, but anytime you have stuff being applied to a hard surface like a road, it's going to run off when it mm-hmm. rains or when the snow and ice melts. That gets into drainage ditches, which flow into streams, and it can, you know, certainly eventually reach your major rivers and get into lakes. And any kind of contaminants like that can cause different problems. So I can't speak to exactly what the level of impact road salt has had on our lakes yet, but I know that there are people that are looking into that issue carefully. And I think one thing, certainly it's something that I think at the state level we should be looking at and should be seeing if there are alternatives that can be used. But it's something I think also local lake organizations and local citizens can look at with their counties and with their towns and cities in talking to their governments and their street crews as to what kind of you know, what are they putting down on the roads, and are there more ecologically friendly solutions?
Yeah, you look at, we were talking about this on the show a while back, and, you know, you look at some parking lots as an example, and they're, like, white. And there's
right.
no snow there, because, or even some roads where they're white from the salt.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you look at the research and see all the sorts of things that end up in our waters that you don't expect, from road salt to the pharmaceuticals to there are some lakes where there have been shown some level of caffeine, not probably at a dangerous level, but if you have a few leaky septic systems and the groundwater flows into that lake, things can get into those waters that you would not expect.
Yeah. Nick, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You know, we mentioned the convention earlier, but let's go back and give more of the details on the where's and why's and so forth of it
sure.
before I forget.
Yeah, today actually is an important day because it's the end of our early bird registration. So if you're interested in the convention, you can find out more information. Go to wisconsinlakes.org. And click on, there's a link to the convention information down at the bottom, or if you Google Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, you'll get there as well. The convention itself is in Stevens Point at the Holiday Inn on April 18th to the 20th. It's the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention and Water Action Volunteer Symposium. So the WAVE volunteers are the group that do stream monitoring in the state, and they've joined us the last couple of years. We've had some some streams that have related to monitoring the streams as well as the lakes, as we try to take more of a watershed approach to what the Lakes Convention is.
So that's one of it's over a couple of days then, and right at the Holiday Inn, which I've been many a convention there. It's a good place to meet.
Yep, we pack it about as full as it can possibly be. There's I believe 4 or 5 different streams going on at one time, and we call our breakout session streams, which I always think is funny for a Lakes convention. Wednesday is mostly workshops, so longer form things where people hopefully will walk away with some product that something that they've worked on.
So that's Wednesday, and then Thursday is...
Thursday and Friday are our plenary sessions and the breakout sessions.
So, and again, and just in terms of topics, I know loons are one, dams are one.
Yep. We have everything from, to use that bugaboo again, lake organization capacity building. There's a whole, there are a number of different sessions that talk about how to be better organizations, how to... One thing that we've realized as a Lakes Partnership is that the organizations, and we've done a good job fostering new organizations in the state, but where the time has come to really help those organizations reach out and network with other groups and other entities in their area. So we're focusing on sort of building the ability of local organizations to do more with their local networks of partners. And so there's quite a lot dealing with that.
How many associations, lakes associations, are there in the state? Do you know offhand?
There are about 220 or so lake districts, and around this number is there's no real good compendium of these, so it's a somewhat hotly debated topic, but probably in the range of 600 to 700 associations. Some of the smaller associations come and go as needs arise. Though some lake associations have been around since the 19th century, there are a couple that date all the way back to the 1800s.
Wow. Paul in Sheboygan County will give you a chance to join in right now. Paul, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, my question has to do with treatment of invasive aquatic plants in the lakes. We live in a little lake here in Sheboygan County. We have a lake district, lake management district. And our contractor, who's been chemically treating the invasive species in our lake for quite a few years, told us last fall that the state of Wisconsin has modified their allowances to not treat invasive species after July 1st. I wonder if your guest has any comment on that, because a lot of times the invasive species don't really bloom or show up in strength until late summer.
Yeah.
So I'm not a scientist. I should have said that from the outset. So I don't know a lot of the details of the research that has gone into this. But I do know that there is evidence, new evidence that's come out in the last few years as to the effectiveness of some of these chemical treatments and the timing of them. And the state is trying to change its policies to sort of match that science, so that we have a better understanding of when things are effective, and what things are effective, and what some of the unintended consequences of them might be, and some that's beginning to sort of percolate into the policy and what's being allowed.
Okay, so it's possible that this is more effective earlier in the summer than later in the summer, as an example of a certain type of treatment.
Right. As some of these species have become more prevalent and have been here for longer, we're learning a lot more about them. And we're learning what's working as far as treatments. And, you know, we're making adjustments as to how we recommend people deal with that. It's unfortunately, the problem is always that sometimes you want to go hard against something, you know, pump a lot of chemicals into the lake to take care of the problem. And while that might do it in the short term, it can have unintended consequences, or it can cause the plants may come back again later in even more numbers. So It's about trying to look at the sort of long haul of management and getting rid of these.
Okay. Paul, thank you. Terry and Colfax, your turn next. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I live in western Wisconsin, and my attitude is, whether it's lakes, rivers, or whatever, I think we in the rural areas have a real problem with CAFOs, high-capacity wells, sand mining. The Red Cedar River dumps into Lake Taner and Menominee, and that's on record as almost being uninhabitable because of fertilizer. Is this problem, which is not going to get any better, is this problem for local people like me to better focus at the state level and the governor, or continue to work like we've done for years at our local level?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. That's a good question, and I think the answer to both of those is yes. I think continuing to work at the state level is important, but also continue to work at your local level. And, you know, I've been involved for the last few years in the Red Cedar Watershed Conference, which is held every year in Menominee at UW-Stout, that deals with just this issue and trying to bring together the people that live on the lake and that use the lake, along with the farmers who are creating not all, but probably the majority of the runoff that's getting into the river and results in these horrible algae blooms in the lake. And I was there last August, had not had an opportunity to be on that lake in the summer. And we drove up to the landing and got out, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this is one of the worst things I've ever seen. And the locals that were giving me the tour, giving us the tour, said, oh, we're really sorry that it's not really very bad today. It just shocked me that was not bad, as green as the water was. But the people in the Red Cedar Basin have done a really great job of trying to work, trying to educate the farmers that work in the area on good practices that will keep soil on the ground. And it's really been a very powerful message that they've brought, and they're beginning to see some change. They're beginning to see some of those practices as farmers realize that they're actually financially beneficial to them as well as helpful to the water quality, begin to implement that stuff. That's not to say that we don't need to continue to be strong advocates at the state level to make sure that our policies are strong enough to help prevent when necessary this kind of runoff.
Yeah. So there's some hope in that area, at least.
Yeah, I think there's some really strong work. And the great thing is, it's not the, we see this so often these days, the us against them mentality. It's people locally saying, we can get together and, you know, we may still be talking to our state representatives about doing things, but together we can try to solve some problems locally to the extent that we can. So we're all have a part to play in it.
Terry, thanks again. Appreciate it. Jim in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello. My question is enforcement of these ordinances in the towns and cities about blowing their grass cuttings out in the street. I'm almost sure there is ordinances, but...
Yeah. So clippings and lawn fertilizers can play a big role.
Yeah, definitely. If you live on the lake and you've got a lawn that goes all the way down and you don't have any kind of buffer, you know, all of those clippings, that fertilizer that you put on the lawn has a good chance of running off into the lake and may cause problems. And I think Jim points out a problem that we don't sometimes think about is that problem exists in when you're off the lake too, that if you're blowing your stuff out into the street, whether it's clippings or leaves or anything, goes down the storm sewers and that stuff flows out either into a stream or into a lake at some point and can definitely have impacts. I the amount of phosphorus that can come from just a pound of leaves is pretty astounding. It's something like, I don't want to say a number because I'm going to get it wrong, and then people will be mad because they don't have time to call in and correct me.
But it's a lot.
It's a significant amount.
Yeah. Well, this has been great fun, Mike. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us again. Tell us, how do we get involved in that conference?
Yeah, if you just go to the Wisconsin Lakes website, so it's Wisconsin Lakes, all one word, .org, down at the bottom of the page, there will be a link to the Lakes Convention, and you can find out everything you need to know about it there. You can come for a day or part of a day, however much, or the whole shebang, which we'd love to have you there. So if you're not part of a lake organization, there's still a lot of stuff that will be of use to you. So we'd love to have you.
Mike, it's a pleasure. Thanks. We'll look forward to another visit from you.
Thank you so much.
Mike Engelson, Executive Director of Wisconsin Lakes. And it was fun talking and interesting talking with him about what they're doing to help our waterways. Appreciate having him with us. And thank you so much for being with us as well. And I hope you stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.